Welcome to this special episode of Anti-Capitalist Radio on the fight for Palestinian liberation. In horror, the world has witnessed the recent events in the Middle East. The Islamic organisation Hamas launched a surprise attack on Israeli territory on the morning of Saturday, 7th of October, 2023. This attack saw around 1,400 Israelis killed and several hundred hostages taken. In response, the Israeli war machine has swung into operation, levelling large parts of the Gaza Strip and occupying a vast part of the Palestinian territory. Some commentators have treated the Hamas attack without context, however, as if a random terrorist group suddenly committed an atrocity. But the Hamas violence is part of a wider political question in the region, one that starts with the imperialist designs in the Middle East, the consequences of the Holocaust, and the creation of Israel as a highly militarized settler colonial state. Broadly, Israel is a product of Western imperialist designs to have an ally in the region to serve their interests, and the Palestinians are the ones who have been left without a state and without a future. To understand the context, we need to know the history. The idea of a specifically Jewish nation in the Middle East was promoted by a Jewish Austro-Hungarian journalist called Theodor Herzl in his 1896 pamphlet, The Jewish State. Dealing with serious episodes of anti-Semitism in Europe, the debate among Jews living there was whether anti-Semitism could be defeated or had to be avoided. Herzl concluded that anti-Semitism would always be with us, and as such the best thing Jewish people could do would be to leave Europe and form their own state elsewhere. The cause of Zionism was taken up by the British establishment in the 1910s, an outgrowth of British imperialism that found an ideological basis in Anglican Christian Zionism. The Balfour Declaration in 1917 committed the British government to a national home for Jewish people in the area known as Palestine after the First World War, built on land seized after the collapse of the Ottoman Empire. Despite this official promotion by the British ruling class, Zionism as a specific ideology remained a minority force within Jewish communities globally. It is worth pointing out that when Arthur James Balfour was the Prime Minister in 1905, his government passed the Aliens Act, the first legislation in Britain to curb migration and refugees into the country, including Jewish immigrants. The Balfour Declaration of 1917 has to be seen in that context. It was the horrors of World War II and the Nazi Holocaust which saw Zionism emerge as a mass ideology. 6 million Jewish people were murdered by Hitler's fascist death cult. Many survivors became convinced that only a Jewish state could protect them. Prior to this, the dominant view among Jewish people in Europe was cohabitation or even for a socialist revolution. But after the war, such ideas seemed to have failed, and many survivors looked to Zionism as a way of escaping the cycles of violence inflicted on Jewish people. Before the existence of Israel, the area known as British Mandate Palestine was inhabited by Arabs, both Muslim and Christian, Jews and others, and during the first part of the 20th century, as they left Europe to set up farms and villages in the Holy Land. After the end of World War II, more Jewish refugees arrived, and the fight by Zionist nationalists began to accelerate, with armed gangs and militias carving out more and more land and territory. The UN proposed a divided Palestine with a Jewish state. 55% of the land of historic Palestine would be for Israel, and 42% for the Arabs. The city of Jerusalem would be placed under international administration in this plan. But this was unacceptable to the Zionists. They were driven by a vision of a greater Israel and argued that the Arab lands were largely empty. They claimed that the territory was, as they called it, land without a people for a people without a land. But this was a myth used to justify expansionism. The Zionists fought instead to make facts on the ground, attacking villages and towns to expel Arab residents to enlarge the borders of Israel before it was formally recognised. The creation of Israel became known as the Nakba, the Arabic word for catastrophe. Over 500 Arab villages were emptied and the Arab population of Jaffa was attacked by Zionist militias, reducing the population from 100,000 to only 5,000 in less than a week. Between 750,000 and 900,000 Palestinians were driven from their ancestral lands, many of the descendants now languishing in refugee camps in Lebanon and Jordan or scattered across the world. The formation of Israel was declared by Ben-Gurion on 14th of May 1948 on the former territory of British Mandate Palestine. It is worth noting that the post-colonial Arab states were part of what produced this event, failing to adequately support the Palestinians and lining up behind the interests of their previous British and French colonial masters. Palestine was not formally recognised as a state, and Israel lobbied hard for that to remain the case for many decades, knowing it would be too politically dangerous to have a Palestinian nation with an army and proper state apparatus on its border. Today, a majority of Palestinians live in exile. They make up 7 million refugees globally. This is why the demand for the right of return is central to the Palestinian movement. Under the current political regime, anyone who fits the criteria to be Jewish, as decided by Israel, can emigrate there under the law of return, while Palestinians remain exiled, denied their right of return as outlined in international law. In 1967, after mounting tensions in the region, Israel was attacked by Egypt, Syria and Jordan. But its military easily won the 6 days' war and used it as an opportunity to seize and occupy the West Bank and Gaza Strip. During this time, a number of revolutionary liberation organisations emerged among the Palestinians. The largest was Fatah, led by Yasser Arafat, left nationalists fighting for a single binational state for Jews and Arabs in the territory of British Mandate Palestine. On their left were organisations like the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, the PFLP, a revolutionary socialist organisation, and the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, an organisation more closely aligned with the Soviet Union. These were part of an umbrella group called the Palestine Liberation Organisation, the PLO. After 1967, Israel began a settler colonial expansion into the Palestinian territories it had seized, establishing heavily armed settlements and offering financial incentives for families to move there. The UN repeatedly passed motions condemning the settlements of occupied lands, pointing out that it is a violation of international law, but Israel largely ignored these toothless protests. Anything more serious debated at the UN Security Council was always vetoed by the USA, a close ally of Israel. In response to the occupation of their remaining lands in 1987, the Palestinians launched their first intifada, which means shrugging off. This was a mass, largely non-violent civil disobedience campaign that extended into the heart of Israel among the Palestinian workers and civilians living there. The response by Israel was to expel most Palestinian workers from its territory, increasing its discriminatory treatment to the remaining Palestinians and Arabs. As a result of the First Intifada, which certainly in its initial stages was as much a revolt by ordinary Palestinians against the PLO as against Israel, Israel realised its only hope of subduing Palestinian unrest was to co-opt the PLO to be its agent in policing Palestine. The massive and coordinated resistance of the First Intifada led to a historic conference in Oslo where the PLO leader Yasser Arafat met with Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin to broker a peace deal under the watchful eye of US President Bill Clinton. This meeting was heralded as a great success by the West. It committed Israel to withdrawing soldiers from the Gaza Strip and the West Bank and recognising the Palestinian Authority, in return for which the PLO would recognise Israel's right to exist and accept a two-state solution. This left Palestinian refugees in limbo in terms of their right to return to their historic homelands, languishing in refugee camps in Lebanon and Jordan and elsewhere until some unknown future date. Oslo was not merely a capitulation, it was a betrayal of the Palestinian struggle and set the cause of national liberation back. Even so, the Oslo Accords were still too much of a compromise for the Israeli far right, who assassinated Rabin in 1995 as punishment for doing any kind of deal with the Palestinians. It was also during this time that more radical Islamic politics gained a voice among the Palestinians, as well as other countries across the region. Hamas emerged in 1987 as the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Its ranks grew after the collapse of the Soviet Union, as well as the apparent political defeat of the nationalist movements. It encouraged some to seek solutions in religious fundamentalist politics. Hamas advocated an openly anti-Semitic project, as opposed to forming a secular binational state, as Fatah and others within the PLO had done. A second intifada, also known as the Al-Aqsa Intifada, was launched in 2000 after continued settlement expansion in the West Bank forced out more Palestinians from their homes, and the right-wing Likud leader, Ariel Sharon, provocatively visited the Al-Aqsa Mosque site alongside hundreds of armed police. Protests by Palestinians were met with force by Israeli police and soldiers, leading to a wider uprising across Gaza and the West Bank. In 2005, the Israeli government decided to abandon the Gaza Strip and evacuated settlers there, many of whom were ideologically committed to settling the entirety of Palestine and fought violently against IDF soldiers deployed against them. In 2006, Palestine held its first democratic election, but as far as Israel and the international community was concerned, it returned the wrong result. Hamas won the legislative elections mostly on an anti-corruption ticket, directly critical of the Palestinian Authority run by Fatah, which had become complacent and enriched itself from international money while doing little to resist the continued settlement-building programme in the West Bank. This result was condemned by the international community. After several months of political deadlock, a civil war erupted between Palestinians, in no small part encouraged by Israel, which saw Fatah seize the West Bank and Hamas the Gaza Strip. The existence of Hamas gave Israel the excuse to effectively turn Gaza into an open-air prison, bulldozing the airport, closing the docks and constructing huge security walls and fences to trap the Palestinians in. Israel's society is now moving even further towards the far right. As a settler colonial state, racism has always been part of Israeli political life, much like with other colonial states such as the USA, Australia or Britain with its formerly vast empire. We can see the growing racist rhetoric by the Israeli government dating back years. In the 1980s, Prime Minister Menachem Begin called Palestinians beasts walking on two legs. In recent years, the far right in Israel has become even more powerful. Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich openly declared in January 2023 he was a proud fascist and homophobe. Another National Security Minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, said in August about Israeli rights in the West Bank, "My right, my wife's, my children's, to roam the roads of the West Bank, and more important, the right of movement of the Arab." Ben-Gvir says it has been years since he chanted death to Arabs on rallies and mass demonstrations. Now he only chants death to terrorists. The fact is that the Israeli far-right and Hamas have a history together. Israeli far-right politicians and cynical intelligence and security officers helped Hamas grow and consolidate in the 1980s. During that decade, when the PLO and its affiliate organisations were illegal, Israel allowed the Islamic groups that eventually formed Hamas to operate legally, receive funds and organise, seeing them as a useful counterweight to the left and nationalists. They have always seen Hamas as a useful foil to Palestinian statehood. It was harder to say no and to mobilise international opposition to secular democrats asking for national rights. It's far easier to oppose Hamas because they can point to them and say they are just violent Islamic reactionaries, rallying international support as part of the so-called War on Terror. The Times of Israel reported on the 8th of October 2023, the day after the Hamas attack on Israeli territory, that most of the time Israeli policy was to treat the Palestinian Authority as a burden and Hamas as an asset. Far-right politicians like Bezalel Smotrich, now the finance minister in the hardline government and leader of the religious Zionism party, said so himself in 2015. According to various reports, Netanyahu made a similar point at a Likud faction meeting in early 2019, when he was quoted as saying that those who oppose a Palestinian state should support the transfer of funds to Gaza, because maintaining the separation between the Palestinian Authority and the West Bank and Hamas in Gaza would prevent the establishment of a Palestinian state. End quote. Palestine today exists as a parlous non-state. The Palestinian Authority in the West Bank relies on Israel for everything from amenities to tax collection. Palestinian Authority MPs are routinely arrested if the Israeli government doesn't like them, what they are saying or thinks they are linked to Hamas or other proscribed organisations. Over 5,000 political prisoners, Palestinians, some children, rot in Israeli jails, many without trial. Merciless expansion of the Israeli settlements on the West Bank encroaches into Palestinian land. Ancient olive trees are uprooted, farms destroyed, homes are levelled. In the Gaza Strip, the economy has completely collapsed. The people there are entirely reliant on international aid. Meanwhile, Israel receives billions of dollars in military aid from countries like the USA, while supplying billions of dollars in weaponry to China's military. Israel is one of the most militarised countries in the world. It is the size of Wales, with arguably the fourth most powerful army on the planet. This is the context of the Hamas attack. Palestinian journalist Mohammed R. Marwash wrote in the Plus 972 magazine, "It has therefore become increasingly clear that Palestinians in Gaza, after enduring 16 years of siege, are reaching a breaking point." This is also the context in which we are working to build solidarity with Palestine. Anti-capitalist resistance is in unconditional support of the Palestinians' right for their national freedoms, though we are not uncritical of the tactics and politics of groups like Hamas. The purposeful killing of civilians is not part of a strategy that can win. It's not a strategy that can unite people across ethnicities and borders to fight for genuine human liberation. We utterly reject the accusations of anti-Semitism levelled at socialists who support the Palestinian cause. Socialists applaud the actions of organisations like Stand Together and before them movements like Gush Shalom, who bravely fought the racist logic of Israeli supremacy and mobilised hundreds of thousands in the cause of peace. Socialists also oppose any violence aimed at Jewish people simply because they are Jewish, just as much as violence against Arabs because of their ethnicity or Muslims because of their religion is also wrong. But we do have to understand how Israel's continued existence as a violent colonial state, expanding into the West Bank and besieging Gaza, does not make Jewish people more safe, and we cannot live in a world where one group's national rights exist at the expense of another's. As a result, we do not agree that it is anti-Semitic to oppose Israel as a Jewish majority state, simply because to support such a project disenfranchises the Palestinian Arabs that also live in the area. We need to create a political situation in which Jewish people can live safely alongside Arabs and anyone else. This is why we endorse a binational secular socialist state for both peoples, where the land and economy is socialised and resources can be democratically distributed. It will require a revolutionary struggle against colonialism and for a different political and economic system. This will need to happen across the Middle East. It is not just about defeating the Zionist colonial project, but also overthrowing the reactionary regimes in Egypt, Jordan and Syria, fighting for a democratic revolution in Lebanon to abolish the confessional state there left by the French. This is why Palestine is such a crucial issue, because the crisis of the Palestinian people is the consequence of the failure of imperialism and the international order to create a world that can provide for everyone. The borders of Mandate Palestine were themselves a product of imperialism, carving up the region after the fall of the Ottoman Empire. The solution cannot be contained within these limited coordinates and lines on a map drawn up over 100 years ago. What follows are the two statements we have been circulating, one from Anti-Capitalist Resistance, the other from the Fourth International, of which we are an observer organisation. The statement from Anti-Capitalist Resistance on the situation in Palestine reads as follows. Israel is committing war crimes on a massive scale in Gaza. Collective punishment, siege and blockade, denial of food, water, power and other essentials, use of white phosphorus weapons against civilians, uprooting and expulsion of hundreds of thousands of residents, all of these are undoubted war crimes, and the perpetrators should face international tribunals. Meanwhile, in the occupied West Bank, Israeli troops and settlers continue their daily persecution, killing scores of Palestinians since the 7th of October and driving them out of several villages in preparation for future illegal settlements. It is no excuse to point to the atrocities committed by Hamas. These too are to be condemned. But we should not lose sight of the context. Israel's behaviour in the past 2 weeks is a direct continuation of its criminal behaviour over the past 75 years, beginning with the Nakba of 1948. The establishment of the Israeli state over the ruins of Palestine, the expulsion of the majority of its population, and the destruction of hundreds of towns and villages. The suffering of the Palestinian people since then, whether as exiles and refugees denied return to their homes and land, as residents of the West Bank and Gaza living under Israeli occupation and military rule since 1967, or as a very much third-class citizens in the Israeli state, where they now form around 20% of the population, has provided the fertile ground in which nihilistic religious fanaticism has taken hold, strongly abetted, as documented in the Israeli press, by tacit support from successive Israeli governments. The area between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean Sea is now in effect one single apartheid state. For three quarters of its short existence, this has been the reality of the Israeli state. And that is why the call from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, reflects a genuine aspiration for liberation from an intolerable reality and for freedom and equality, and not an anti-Semitic desire to eliminate all Jews from the region. Anti-capitalist resistance stands in unconditional solidarity with the Palestinian struggle for liberation. We fight for a future in which Palestinian Arabs and Israeli Jews will be able to live in genuine equality between the river and the sea. This is the statement by the Executive Bureau of the Fourth International. The root cause of the violence is the occupation of Palestine by the Israeli state. Palestinians have borne the brunt of the death and destruction of the past 75 years. The situation in the Gaza Strip is particularly inhuman. Here the population has been subjected to ongoing humiliation, collective punishments and violence from the Israeli state. Appeals for de-escalation are pointless. One-sided condemnations of violence by Hamas are hypocritical, as long as this root cause is not addressed. The Israeli state, governed by varying coalitions, has adapted a strategy of turning the Gaza Strip into an open-air prison, subjecting its population to regular violent offensives. The offensive by Hamas has shown the unsustainable nature of this inhuman strategy. Rather than looking for ways to end the violence and the suffering, the colonial Israeli state, supported by governments across the West, is only doubling down on this strategy, thereby making more bloodshed and suffering inevitable. Already we are hearing voices demanding an intensification of the oppression of the Palestinian people, with members of the Israeli government adopting genocidal rhetoric about fighting inhuman beasts, and utterly cynical calls on Palestinians to leave the Gaza Strip if they want to save themselves from Israeli military operations. This means worsening even further a situation that is creating many Palestinians as well as Israeli civilian casualties that we deplore. We condemn the hypocrisy of those who act as if the violence came out of nowhere and ignore 75 years of colonial oppression of the Palestinian people by the Israeli state. Nothing can justify attacks targeting civilians, and this standard should be upheld universally in the condemnation of all such war crimes. We refuse to join the chorus of those who condemn violence when committed by Palestinians, but ignore or, like Western governments, actively support it in the form of the continued war crimes and crimes against humanity committed by the Israeli state. The so-called international community is deeply complicit in making violence inevitable and offers no solutions to address its cause, the continued occupation of the Palestinian people. This oppression carried out by the state that is militarily vastly superior and supported by the most powerful countries in the world will make future violent explosions inevitable. All those who have for decades supported this occupation are responsible. We do not share Hamas's strategy and tactics because this path cannot put an end to the occupation, which is the only way to end the violence. The end of the occupation is only possible through the collective resistance of the Palestinian masses, along with the anti-war activists in the Israeli state and supported by their international allies. As the Fourth International, we take pride in being among these allies. We are with the Palestinian people in their continued resistance against the Israeli colonialism and their struggle for self-determination. That is why we call for intensification of support for the campaign of boycott, divestment and sanctions, for statements and demonstrations of solidarity with the Palestinian people. Our goal is an end to Israeli colonialism and a state with equal rights for all its people. On the immediate level, we demand the cessation of the Israeli state's actions against the Palestinian population in Gaza, the West Bank and East Jerusalem, and an end to relations of any kind with the colonial Israeli apartheid regime. Well, thank you for listening to that podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and we look forward to seeing you on a protest in defence of Palestinian rights soon. We're also hoping to organise an eco-socialism conference in London and online on the 2nd of December, which you might be interested in. Please check out ecosocialism-conference.org for more details.